You've heard of BetaShares. You've probably seen the logo on our podcast. You might even be among their 1 million investors. So you can imagine that I'm delighted to say BetaShares is the official ETF partner of the Australian Finance Podcast. With nearly 100 exchange-traded funds, you can go to betashares.com.au and immerse yourself in ETFs and unique insights covering all of the sectors, themes, core and satellite positions you could want. Think cybersecurity through the HACK ETF, robotics and AI with the RBTZ ETF, and uranium with the URNM ETF. The list goes on. To explore the BetaShares ETF range, visit betashares.com.au, read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website, and consider if the fund is right for you. BetaShares Capital Limited is the issuer. Welcome to the Australian Finance Podcast.
I'm Kate Campbell.
And I'm Owen Rask.
And we're here to give you the tools and knowledge to invest both your time and money better.
If you're new, feel free to jump in with our Starter Pack series that aired in early 2022, or our Shares or ETF mini series.
We've got plenty to share with you in today's episode, but if you want to catch us on socials,
head to Rask Australia on Insta and Twitter.
I'm also found at Kate Campbell AUS on Insta.
And I'm Owen Rask AU on Insta.
Just beware of the fake accounts. We'll never DM you about trading strategies or crypto. And if it sounds a bit weird, it's probably not us.
And just one final heads up before we get into the show. This podcast contains general financial information only. Chris Bates, how are you going, mate?
Owen, love chatting, mate. I'm doing very well. How you doing?
Good, mate. Good. We've got a lot of questions to get through today, and questions are always a bit of fun. You as a former financial advisor, now mortgage broker, one of the most popular mortgage brokers in Australia, not just you, but the business that you and the team are building. We're going to get to some questions, and that means that I'm going to insert an extra disclaimer per Kate's recommendations, which is just that we do love your questions and send them in. There's a link in your podcast player or below the video on YouTube, but we can only provide general information, and we're going to stick to property, and we're going to stick to things like mortgages and that sort of stuff today. Every month, we're hoping to get Chris on the show to answer your property-related questions, especially if you're a first home buyer or investor. We want to hear from you. Send us your questions. We love them. But before we get to that, mate, maybe just a few icebreakers to have a bit of fun. You're a Sydney sider. You did spend a bit of time in Melbourne. You lived in the UK. Favorite restaurant in Sydney?
I'm going to give a pump to my mate who owns a restaurant.
Okay.
The Queen Esther up on the beaches. If everyone likes some Israeli food, it is unbelievable. Got a place in Newport and another place in Mona Vale. Check it out. Great
what's
food.
What's it called? It's
called Queen Esther.
Queen Esther. Okay.
And, I like it, mate. It's very, very good food. We used it for our Christmas party, actually. So they catered it. We had a little down at Clontarf Reserve, and I got a picnic set up for the team, and Israeli food came in, a party entertainer for the kids. And that was our Christmas party. So that was good fun.
Love it. And I know you do like to do a little bit of travel with the kids. Favorite tourist destination within Australia?
We went to Barrington Tops a couple of weeks ago, swimming in a river there. That is pretty special. And the hiking, I was very close to standing on a red-bellied black snake, hiking away in my little world. We left the kids for the weekend for the first time ever, and I was a meter away from standing on a 3-meter-plus red belly, and I absolutely shit myself. Screamed, ran back for 10 meters, and then thought it was a good idea to rip out my phone and take a video of it. I wanted to show everyone I was hiking past that video. I was like, just letting you know, there's a big red belly up there. Have a look at this. And watching their faces. And a few people were like, no, I'm not looking at that. I'm not looking at that. And I'm like, yeah, no, he's just up there. He's just up there. And a big smile on my face.
I like it, mate. What was the place called, sir?
Barrington Tops. About an hour and a half or 3 hours north of Sydney. And a lot of people go coastal always, right? But I do like going inland, you know, the rainforests and the hikes and the it's pretty special. South coast of New South Wales, I mean, and Wilson's Prom, I grew up there going as a kid. That has to be one of the, UNESCO World Heritage places. I don't know if it is, but it should be. That's pretty amazing.
I like it, mate. Okay, last one, which is just, you do have kids, you've got a family. Best low-cost way to keep kids entertained?
Well, the phone's pretty cheap, but I wouldn't recommend it for screen time. My daughter does laugh like craft. I mean, you can probably see my fingers, probably not, but I know nail polish was probably only a dollar, and that kept her entertained for 15 minutes this morning. So, yeah, nail polish.
Thought you were looking good. Yeah.
Yeah. Glitter day.
Yeah, cool, mate. I like it. Okay, so one of the big things that people may be familiar with, maybe not, we did an episode recently on the Australian Property Podcast, which you co-host every week with Pete, Amy, and myself, make a cameo appearance every now and then. One of the things that we spoke about recently was your business, Blask, which many people in the RAS community are familiar with, has basically merged with another business to create this new business called Flint Group. I know this has been a huge undertaking, and we can put a link in the show notes to that episode, and we went into great depth. But can you give us kind of the quick version of what this means for you and what this means for basically, I guess, the industry as well?
Look, I think there's you know, a real need to have something that is an amazing customer experience. I mean, people are wanting that, right? I want it whenever I go somewhere, right? And a digital technology driven experience, and that costs money. And there's you know, brokers more and more really need to invest in their customer and digital experience. And the way to do that is, you know, having scale, right? Having a team. And so we're really leaning into the benefits of scale. And also, as we had established businesses, both mine and Christian's, we already had two team members doing similar things. And there's, you know, there's efficiency that we had. And so by combining together, it allows us to pool our resources. And, you know, once we did that, we wouldn't, you know, ignorantly didn't know that other people would want to join. And we've had lots of people wanting to join us in the last few weeks. We had an agricultural specialist broker join us this week. Anyone wants to do farming, lending, and you know, regional lending, he's all over it. I mean, I haven't done that much of that. So we've got a private banker joined a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, clients that are on that 10 million plus, or, you know, earning a million plus, like, that's you know, a real specialty. He's done, been a private banker for 15 years. And so we're getting you know, medico specialists we're in final conversations with as well. And so that's what we're doing. We're building a real team of experts across lots of different niches. And so if a client does fit those briefs, that we've got the right person in their hands. Rather than a bit more like a generalist broker, I absolutely, you know, love helping young couples and families and help them think through. But then, you know, a lot of people, we've got a guy who's going to focus on the over 50 market and the downsizing market. And I've done very little lending in that as a percentage of our overall book. But he's going to do a priority. So that's the idea about what we're trying to do is, and we're going to invest heavily into our processes. And we already, I would say, was one of the more digital savvy and using as many tools than most brokers. We weren't afraid to try technology if we thought it was better for our productivity or our efficiency or delivering a better experience. But this is going to turbocharge that. And yeah, it's super exciting. It does feel a little bit like we're flying a plane that's burning at the moment. You know, when things are scaling fast, things are breaking, and you know, but I ultimately think on the other side of this hill, you know, the client outcomes, and the we're always focused on the client outcomes, but then the client experience is going to be much better than what we could offer 12 months ago. And so yeah, it's fun, but also scary.
Well, I know you were on the front cover of I think multiple magazines and these types of things with Christian, your new business partner, and the team remains. So for everyone that's been through the Blusk experience, that all remains. You can still get in contact with Chris and the team, still work with the team exactly the same way. But this is basically an opportunity for Christian and the team at large now to really set the standard in Australia. I think the thing that's really funny is there's two big mortgage broking industry awards for anyone that doesn't know. And Chris won one, and his new business partner, Christian, won the other last year. So it gives you a sense of like the kind of the heavyweights in the industry and the people who are leading the charge coming together, which is a wonderful thing. But mate, we've got a few questions to get through. And I love this first one, which came from Failed Property Investors. That's the name they've given us. G'day, gurus. And this is actually a pretty common one. I actually had a similar question to this on Twitter or X the other day. G'day, gurus. I bought an apartment in 2008 for $400,000. I just got it valued, and now it's worth $380,000. So quick math, that's $20,000 less than 16 years ago. I have paid off $140,000 on the loan, I am considering selling it as a dud investment and moving the cash to a home loan offset or a boring ETF like VAS. Would love to know your thoughts on the pros and cons of selling. And they've given us some pros, which are the rent now covers the running costs and interest. The cash I put in goes off the principal. I have paid entry costs, of course. The cons, however, that would be $100,000 off my home loan, and which would save me lots of interest. Would love to hear your thoughts. So obviously, we give general information on the show. So this is very common, Chris. I've found, I don't know, like maybe you can debunk that myth, but a lot of apartment owners, can you just, if you've probably dealt with this many, many times, what do you think?
Probably in Melbourne, they're a property investor. It's been a huge problem in Melbourne. And once a dud, always a dud. Once a dog, always a dog. You know, like if the fundamentals are flawed with property, then you can't all of a sudden just tidy it up and expect it to get enormous growth, right? So if it's got a demand issue, it's highly, you know, a one bed, a studio, it only suits a very small demographic, it's not that nice, it's really cheap and cheerful, it's like a really poor street view, noise, smell, privacy, it's a dud, right? You just need to accept that you've got a dud. And expecting a dud to all of a sudden become a great property is just very wishful thinking. And, you know, it's been 16 years. I mean, you probably thought about selling this about 20 times over that 16 years. And I think when you come back in 10 years' time, you go, well, how would I be better? I mean, yeah, there is an interesting thing. You might start to see price growth just because building costs are going up and that they all of a sudden there's this, you know, underbuilding over the next few years. But that doesn't mean that that growth rate's going to be enormous, right? And so there's two opportunity costs. One here is you're stopping you doing other investing. That's probably the big one I see. When someone does a bad investment, they stop, whether it's shares or property. I bought some shares, didn't work out. I'm never going shares again.
Yeah, I see that all
like
the time.
That, it's just doesn't work.
It's gambling, they say. Yeah,
exactly. And then they have this belief for the rest of their life. So they stop themselves. They basically self-sabotage forever. Like that's, you just had a bad experience. You just didn't approach it the right way. There were some lessons to learn. You're going to have another crack. Get back on the horse. The same thing happens with property investors. Read the CoreLogic Pain and Gain report. You can see a lot of people lose money on property. It's a massive myth that everyone wins on property. No one talks about barbecues when they lose money, right? So this person probably doesn't tell their mates at the barbecue what they did. Anyway, so this situation here, I would say there's two opportunity costs. One, you could definitely get that money out and pay off your mortgage. Really, you shouldn't have been paying that off anyway. It should be an interest only. That money you paid off that mortgage should have been paying off your home. You should be paying off home debt, not investment debt. So you should have had this as interest only the whole time.
Is that because it's tax deductible for an interest investment?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So the interest on that property is tax deductible, which means it's a lower cost than your home debt, which is non-deductible. And so what you want to be doing is paying off your home. And then and also that feels better when your mortgage on your home is lower, then you feel more confident around yourself financially. If anything happens with work, you feel you've got ability to pay it, et cetera. And everyone wants to get to retirement with their home paid off. And so that's another reason, not just the tax reason. It's just that peace of mind, I would say. And so this situation, you should have been paying that one off anyway, but you can't go back in time. That's fine. Now you've got some equity in it, not through growth, and it's gone down in value. Personally, you'd probably want to take that equity, pay off your home. But that doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean you should potentially, you might want to go and put some money in some shares and things like that, because it depends on how much equity you've got. But don't be afraid to get back into the property market. Just because it hasn't gone right the first time doesn't mean it doesn't go right the second time. Depending on your age and how long you've got to go before retirement and other assets you've got and things like that, well, maybe you should just, you know, like go back in time and say, look, if I didn't buy this property, if I bought a different property, if I spent $400,000 on a house in Melbourne back in 2008, this is quite painful, but it is eye-opening, and compare that to what the apartment is. So maybe you bought an apartment in the city or in Docklands or Footscray or, you know, somewhere like that. And what happens if you bought a house in Sunshine? You know, as an example,
it probably was $400,000. For the context for people, that's a bit further out of the CBD. It's not as nice for most people. So that's the kind of context you're saying is like you probably bought this apartment in the inner city where you thought this is a good trendy area, whatever, when maybe you could have got a cheaper looking house with some land somewhere out further.
Exactly. And maybe what even Sunshine, maybe could have gotten somewhere closer to Yarraville or Kingsville. I'm just talking the inner west in Melbourne, some suburbs. Just thinking maybe what was worth $400,000 back in 2008. And then look at what that's worth. Now, this is going to be painful. And
it's probably worth a million plus, to be honest.
Exactly. And so not only have you lost the 20K or the 50K and then all the negative cash flow, but you've lost the opportunity cost. And that's where it's really going to hurt. But hey, there's no point having regrets in life, and I should have, could have, would have. You can't change the past. So in this situation, if I'm going forward, could I take those learnings and then reapply them and not make those same mistakes twice? And that would be my advice here is once a dud's always a dud. And holding on for, there's this sunk cost bias, like this loss aversion bias. It's so powerful. The thing about behavioral biases is you don't know they're controlling you, and they absolutely are. You want to sell this for more than you paid. And what happens a lot with apartments is there's a boom and people are paying premiums because there's an undersupply and there's FOMO in the market. And then all of a sudden there's an undersupply and people overpay, developers make some profits. That sets a new price. Then at that price, developers can build more and then they go and build lots. This happened in Brisbane and Melbourne. And then prices fall because there's now an oversupply. All those investors say, hang on a sec, I paid in Brisbane, it was like maybe around the 500 mark. There was a lot of oversupply. All those investors, as soon as that can sell for more than 501,000, or some investors say the buy cost plus the sell cost, so maybe 550, they sell. And so, you know, once these apartments start getting back into the black, then you'll find that other investors start selling too, just because of that behavioral bias. And then you get this oversupply and prices come back down again. So you get this flatlining in prices. And so, mate, if it's a dud, it's probably always going to be a dud. Time to move on and learn.
This is a really interesting point, Chris, because a lot of people that I'm hearing now, you know, young couples in particular, young singles, when I say young, like anywhere up to 40 these days, they're looking to buy a home, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, even Perth, it's getting this way now, parts of Adelaide. They're not able to buy the house. And some of them, particularly in the East Coast major cities, they've kind of just ruled out even thinking about that they could one day own a home, like a house, right? And so they've kind of got this attitude where, well, maybe an apartment is the best thing for me. So we hear stories like this, and it may scare people. So it may like, well, you know, hopefully everyone that listens to this show, biggest finance podcast in the country, you would know that ideally you get land value in your property purchases. But sometimes it's just not achievable, Chris. So, you know, if someone does have the choice now of apartment or nothing, does that, what do they do?
It's not to say, oh, so then there's two types of apartments. There's high density, not scarce in areas that they're going to build a lot more.
Right.
And then there's apartments that are little blocks of six units that are in areas where they're not going to build more and that they're surrounded by multi-million dollar houses. And
there's some of those in Toorak. It's a very expensive suburb in Melbourne.
Absolutely. And, you know, you can look in, even in the inner north of Melbourne, you know, I mean, if you stay away from the main roads, you know, the little quieter back streets or, you know, in the Bayside or depending, you can go across in Sydney, there's lots of those. And in Brisbane, there are too. And even these apartments in Brisbane are starting to go up a lot more than the high density, right? So, you know, it's not to say all apartments can't go up. Ultimately, there is going to be a shift to more living from an owner-occupier point of view, not sort of investor point of view in apartments. You know, there's just these natural transitions as property markets mature. You know, everyone would have loved the 4 or 5-bedroom house in the premium suburbs in the past, and, you know, that's and moved them out to the outer suburbs. And now they're going for the 3-bedder houses, then they're going for the 2-bedder houses, now they're going for the apartments. And so there's just this natural maturity happening in. And naturally, you will see some these older apartments that are offering amazing lifestyle because they're attached to where housing's really expensive and they're not building more apartments. They're going to be undersupplied. There is, maybe some planning controls happening around sort of the busier roads and train stations. So you've got to be careful because suburbs are going to change. They're not going to be, you know, the last 30 years of no development doesn't guarantee you the next 30 years there's not going to be any development.
We need more houses in Australia, right? We need more houses. So
more dwellings, absolutely. And so, yeah, you just got to be careful what you buy. Don't buy the high-density stuff where they're going to build lots of it just so you enter the market. I do think you are going to regret that in the future. And a lot of first-home buyers, like first-time investors, absolutely wish they never entered. And I think when parents are barking in your ears saying, you just got to buy, you just got to enter the market, just get something. And then they're just forcing you down this route saying, no, dad, mum, that's not how it works. Just because you bought any property back in the day and it went up doesn't mean that's going to do that for me.
Yeah, I think Amy spoke about that on the property podcast recently, where she spoke about how the influence of people around you that are maybe well-intentioned but uninformed. So people that care for you but don't actually know, be very careful of that advice. The other thing that Pete said is for investors in this similar situation where they invest in a property like this person perhaps, is he was talking to clients that got onto some other property podcasts and some groups and some gurus, quote unquote, and they got their entire community to go invest in places like Cairns and buy $100,000 apartments. And Pete makes a great point. If you're going to get a chippy in to fix your $100,000 apartment, it's the same chippy that's going to fix a $2 million property. So just because it's a cheaper asset doesn't mean that the running costs are lower, and that can wipe out any profit you ever make on that asset. So quality, scarcity is what Chris is saying. Okay, so we've got a couple more questions we'll be a bit tidier with, mate. We've got my name, Jeff, which I love this one, play on 21 Jump Street. Love it. Currently working, living in a remote location in Western Queensland for a few years, where I do not wish to buy a house to live in or invest due to poor appreciations / returns. That's good. They've done some research. I will be living in this location for another couple of years, and I currently have a house deposit saved. Would I be better off buying an investment property now in a better location or waiting a few years until I move back to a coastal location to buy a house to live in? Looking to be a first homeowner, but not sure what to do in this situation. Thanks. Good question.
It is a good question.
There's a lot of unknowns.
I've dealt with these situations often, right? You know, people, particularly when they're in different professions, have to go all over the country to get work and get their career and things like that. And or maybe they have a partner that they're, you know, testing the waters and they go live somewhere and they're not sure. They weren't trying to get that partner to move back to the capital city or whatever it might be. And you know, particularly in like essential services, you know, this is a big one, right? We had some clients and they go, well, ultimately, we don't want to live here. Sometimes there's advantages with, you know, rents are quite expensive and we're going to be here for 3 to 5 years. Maybe you should just buy something here. And, you know, often what we're saying is, well, it's going to be a short-term investment. Are you going to keep it on the other end? And would that be your ideal investment to keep? So a lot of people are saying, well, I'm not going to keep it. I'd have to sell it. I wouldn't want to keep an investment property here. So then it's like, well, is it really worth it? Buy costs, sell costs, you know, holding costs, you know, maintenance, sunk costs. For the growth. Now, if it's a really fast moving market and it goes really well, maybe it'll work for you. But if that market's moving fast, probably other markets around the country are moving fast as well. And so, and if you're in a game, you're going to sell it, well, you're not buying funds. You'll have to, even if it goes up in the short term, doesn't guarantee long success. It's one of the mistakes you said around, you know, people buying things like Cairns, for example, where it's really low cost. Sometimes people buy cheaper, cheerful properties and they focus on short term growth, not long term fundamentals. And short-term growth absolutely can happen, and drivers can show that, but that doesn't mean that in 7 years' time that growth is going to continue and it's going to go on for the next 30 years. And so in this situation, Jeff, I mean, coastal location, big coastline in Australia. I'm not sure whereabouts the coast, or some coasts are pretty
maybe narrow. It's Currumbin Valley or somewhere nice, you know, on the border of New South and Queensland. That'd be nice. Coastal.
Yeah, there's lots of nice beaches in Australia, so that's what we've got no lack of, right? And so, or maybe you don't even need a beach. So, I mean, where you're buying coastally, look, if that's ultimately where you want to end up long term and that's a good, strong market, coastal can be scarce, right? Because you lose half the land because that's water. Then you might have some national parks. Then you might have like one road in and then like, you know, and really restrictions on subdivisions. And then ultimately, if they do subdivide, they're not going to subdivide around the town centre where you really want to be. And so you can find scarcity in property markets, not just in capital cities. You can definitely do it in regional locations. And so, yeah, if you could potentially buy that and you're really certain that's where you want it to end up. Look, if that wasn't a great investment and you weren't sure whether you're going to do that anyway, then absolutely just put your eggs into one quality investment property, something that's got a high likelihood of doing well for you. And, you know, and if that means that you have to delay buying a home and maybe you have to go move to this coastal region, then you go rent there as well. And then you hold an investment property for, you know, 7-10 years, you get some good growth on that property. And then as your life situation changes, maybe you're single now, maybe you have a partner, maybe you really start to settle in a community and then you go, actually, maybe it's still not as good a location as my investment property, but home ownership really matters for me and it's still a good investment. So maybe I'll sell my investment property now, take my growth, pay capital gains tax and get a home for myself. And so those would be the options I'd consider.
Yeah, that's a good one. A lot of people in that situation too, like a lot of mining communities, WA. I've been speaking to a lot of people recently that have a really good job somewhere and they're looking to make that migration, either it's back home or somewhere new. And it's so important when you buy that asset, it creates that springboard effect, which is what we talk about a lot on the property podcast. Just a special note here, a reminder to people, we've only got 5 minutes left, but if you are in one of these Facebook communities or you listen to a podcast or you whatever, you're part of a group, just be very, very careful about the advice that you receive from the so-called experts. There's a lot of people out there that have fantastic investment or property strategies, but what they're ultimately doing is trying to get you into cheap properties. And that's can be a very risky thing. So just be eyes wide open, get independent advice before you proceed down that road. We've got two questions. You were going to say something?
Oh, just the confirmation bias I see in these groups and forums and things like that. And what you're thinking that's what society's doing, and you're thinking that's what everyone's doing because you're in this little bubble of a small Facebook group or a propertychat.com, and there's this one forum and a link, and everyone's just going on about it. And what you're actually doing is seeing where there's an investor glut building of a type of thing. And that's actually not great for investment returns. What drives markets is owner-occupier market. So just be careful with the confirmation bias and the echo chamber that you get yourself in there. And then what you might do is that echo chamber gets stronger because someone says, well, that's done really well for me. It's gone up 15%. And then that encourages more people to enter. And at the same time, investors are bailing as well because they're taking their money off the table. And so we absolutely see those things playing out.
Yep. And the nastiest of them all is the so-called expert that has a partnership with the developers or the builder. Just horrible things that they never tell you back. Yeah. Okay. Quick question from Julian. Julian, you've given us way too much info. I'm sorry. I love to hear your story, but because of the rules in Australia, we have to be very careful with this one. So I'm going to summarize your question, Julian. Julian has their professional working couple. They have around 420 grand owing on their mortgage. So they've got about 300 grand, 400 grand equity. They've got a small cash amount. About 100 grand, not a small amount, but 100 grand of cash. And they've got some shares in Perla, long-term sponsor of the show. Fantastic. They're like so many people, Chris, in that they're about to roll off their fixed rate mortgage. They're saying it is 2.49%, which is wonderful. And so now they're left with an option. Do they sell all of their shares? They've got about 15 grand and they've got about 100 grand in cash and just chuck that in the offset. Or do they do something else effectively is what they're saying, like keep it or so on and so forth. I think the ultimate general question here that's on everyone's mind, and we get this across all of the podcasts, is my interest rates have gone up. Should I be making use of the offset account?
Look, absolutely. Offset accounts are amazing, because you limits you the amount of interest you have to pay because it's fully offset. It's not 50%. It's 100%, dollar for dollar. It doesn't cost you anything, but you still got access to the money. If you wake up tomorrow and say, I need that money back, whereas if you pay off your mortgage and maybe you've got redraw, maybe you don't. But that's just that sleep at night factor. So in this situation, you know, it's maybe 100 grand in an offset account. So the net interest is, say, 400 minus 100 in the offset. You're only paying interest on 300. Look, whenever you've got a mortgage and you've got equity in a property, really you should be buying shares with debt rather than cash. Because in this situation, you could put your cash in your offset account, keep paying off your non-deductible debt, and then redraw on your home to buy investments. And then that deductibility of that interest rate is actually lower, that net interest rate's lower than what your home interest rate. So you get a slight arbitrage here where you're paying a lower interest rate on your investment debt than you do for your owner-occupied debt. And then that compounds over time. And so whether you should use equity to invest comes down to your long-term goals. And this is kind of the conversation here. Because you wouldn't want to use your cash. Your cash just is paying your home loan off. Just keep, and when interest rates are higher, you've got to be really careful holding other investments like shares and things like that because the investment return has to beat the guaranteed investment return you're going to get right now is 6% roughly guaranteed paying off your home. So if your shares aren't growing at circa 10%, then you're probably, because of the tax, then you know, just random numbers, but you know, that's roughly what you need to be getting at rather to beat paying off your home. When interest rates are 2% on your home, then you've got to definitely can make more margin on shares because your shares have just got to beat that after tax. So this is as people roll off, I do think there's people who are more likely to sell their shares or portfolios who haven't structured it the right way with debt. to pay off their homes and to limit that interest expense. So yeah, you could do that. Do you invest more into the markets? Well, that comes down to, you know, are you going to stay in the property long term? Do you need to renovate it? Should you be considering property overshares? What's your borrowing capacity? And then ultimately, have you got enough education and knowledge of how to enter the market? You know, and it sounds like in that conversation you do, if you've educated yourself on the benefits of ETFs in that scenario, and you know, you're not sort of trying to pick stocks and time markets and things like that. So that would be my overall approach, is get your debt structure right, understand your long-term goals, and then make sure that if you do invest, you can afford to hold it. Because, you know, yes, you can make some money in shares over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, but, you know, the people who make the most money and do the best and ride market cycles, the people who invest very long-term. And potentially you could do that. You've got a house that you want to live in long-term. You've got some equity, keep paying your mortgage off, but then start building up your investment portfolio, whether that's in shares or property.
Yeah, love it. So we did an episode, Chris and I, recently, Julian, on, I think the title was, Should Owen Use Equity in His Home to something, something about a farm? Go and check that out, because we talked about how people can buy shares or another property using equity in their home. And it's a great conversation that a lot of people are having right now. And Chris was on that. So folks, we've got one more quick question for Chris. He'll probably answer this very quickly, but send in your questions. There's the Ask a Question link in the podcast player. I've got a link in the podcast show notes to the Home Equity Podcast with Chris and I, the Australian Property Podcast, as well as to learn more a bit about Flint Group if you want to see behind the scenes of what Chris and Christian and Ben and the team at Flint Group are building. Mate, the question that I've got for the last one is the one Tim Tam Smasher writes in. It says, great work, team. Thanks for the content. You're very welcome, Tim Tam. Should I stay away from trailing commission cashback mortgage brokers, or are they a good choice in some cases, given the cashback / savings? Perhaps not a good choice for some other cases. Thanks, you rock. Basically, they're asking, mortgage broking, how do you get paid? Tell us a bit.
Look, there is a bit of a sub, you know, it's not many brokers in fairness, but absolutely if you go cashback mortgages, you might find a broker that's willing to give up their long-term income to win you as a client. Ultimately, that's what they're trying to do. Is they're trying to say, hey, my value proposition, I'm not too sure about it, and how I add value besides helping you set up a mortgage. I don't think I add any value long-term. I'll give you what I get paid. So you work with me rather than going to the bank or going to another broker. Yep. But I do think it is really a learning gap, a knowledge gap of that broker to have a value proposition where they truly value themselves. And that's just my overall basis. Now, if that type of mindset of a person, this is, you know, I'm not talking about any of those people who are doing that. I don't know them, etc. But generally speaking, the person's not, you know, valuing themselves, not valuing their education and their knowledge, and aren't going to go and move mountains for you, not only on an ongoing basis, but also isn't going to be that trusted advisor. Like, what you ultimately want is a broker that can be there on your journey long term, can know your backstory, can really, you know, guide you, has the networks, has the knowledge, is building a profitable business, is investing in tech, etc. like that. So absolutely go and work with those brokers. But ultimately, I think you can still pay a small trailing commission. And, you know, we've got two in our repricing team that are constantly trying to reprice your loans. And, you know, and sometimes mortgages are quite simple. I don't need any more debt. I'm never going to do anything else. And so maybe, yeah, you just go to someone. But when someone's got a bit of complexity, hey, I want to buy a home. You know, oh, actually, now I want to upgrade. Now I want to renovate it. Oh, you know what? Now my life's plan changed. I want to upgrade. Actually, no, maybe I should buy an investment property. Or maybe should I do this debt recycling thing? Or actually, I'm thinking about buying an investment property. Oh, wait, now I've got some inheritance. Oh, you know, things are constantly changing and life plans are changing. Oh, you know what? I've got a job opportunity in a state. Or maybe I'm moving overseas right now. I'm just thinking about all the random things in the last week that clients do. And that's where a great broker helps you, right? They're there. And you just want, not to say those other brokers aren't great brokers in terms of knowing how to get loans approved, but just the volume that we see and what we know how to work banks. We get better service, pricing. You know, pricing sometimes, you know, favors because we write a big volume. So that's just some of the challenge of that business model is, you know, I don't think it's the right mindset by the broker. And that just makes me a bit worried about the actual advice they're giving you. Do they see themselves as actually valuable or just a validator, transactional service provider?
Yeah.
And then I think that's very limited.
So for those of you that don't know, most brokers get paid an upfront commission and an ongoing commission, which is quite small. It's quite standardized now across the industry. And that's why mortgage brokers are now becoming the predominant way that people get loans in Australia. It used to be the case that mortgage broking was smaller. Now it's most of the market, and it'll probably just keep growing and growing and growing because people value the advice. I know I do. That's why I went through Chris and his team, Ben and everyone, to get our mortgage sorted, because we needed someone to help us with our business, with all of this sort of stuff, and on an ongoing basis just sends us an email to say, stay or go in terms of the mortgage. What can we get? Is there something better in the market? And they really do value that. So, mate, this has been heaps of fun. Don't forget, folks, send your questions in to Chris and I via the link in your show notes. Once a month, we're doing a show just dedicated to property-related questions. So send them through. It doesn't matter which podcast channel you send it to. This podcast goes across multiple channels. If you haven't already checked out the other RAS podcast, if you want property content each and every week, head to the Australian Property Podcast. There's a link in the show notes. Chris, always a pleasure, mate. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much, Owen.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast. We hope you learned something new and were able to take one thing away from this episode.
If you're keen to learn more, head on over to RASC Education and take one of our free money and investing courses. You could even become a RASC Core member for less than your Netflix subscription each month. And don't forget to subscribe for new episodes in your inbox every week.
Plus, if you enjoyed the show, we'd love you to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and send any questions our way via the link in the description. And before we go on, did this podcast contain personal financial advice just for me?
Absolutely not, Kate. Our podcast actually contains general financial information only. What that means is the information does not take into account your financial needs, goals, objectives, or even your situation. So because of that, it's important that you consider if the information is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on it.
If that all sounds a bit confusing or you're still working out what your needs are, it's a great idea to consult a licensed and trusted financial planner. And don't forget to do your own research.
InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10, and to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart boot camps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that RASC could help you in 2024. As many of you know, RASC has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies, which, considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones, I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can. The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at RASC, which is the launch of our RASC Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have 3 strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the 3 strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high growth strategy focuses on longer term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number 2, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside RASC Core. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios, as well as other members-only content. It's called RASCore. Number three, our first ever partnership with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, two of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 RASC community members have begun the RASC plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number four, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number five, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number one asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect what would happen if. You want to protect your family if something goes wrong. You want to protect your spouse if you lose your job. You want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy. Insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that. But one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out. Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian property podcast by RASC, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of RASCore, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this, this is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax. I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nevexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All RASC users get 20% off an annual plan with Nevexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nevexa's software, and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nevexa, but they do create some great tools which the RASC community uses each and every day. Number eight, want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number nine, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the RASC YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the RASC network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds. or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that, all of that, by going to the Rask Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we are on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. Rask Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is, or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the Rask Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000. And hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support Rask and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the Rask Network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.